talk without killing each other. And this is it. Now we're going to come to this point where we help you solve the problems and talk in a reasonable way.
Susan Heitler has written a book called The Power of Two. And she talks about something, a concept in that book that's called collaborative dialogue. And it's her method of being able to talk back and forth. And the power of two refers to the exponential power that we have as partners compared to what we would have singly. And when she was writing this book, she was kind of coming to the end of the manuscript, and she was trying to decide what to call it. And so she passed the manuscript around to a few family members and asked them to give her some suggestions for names for the book. Well, she first talked to her 21-year-old son, who was in college at the time, and he said, "Well, I know what you should call it. You should call it what we really should have learned in sex education class." Because he said, you know, for all of the education that we get today, no one ever tells us how to do relationships. We're good at finding somebody and falling in love, but when it comes to staying in love, we don't have a clue, and no one teaches us how. So that's what I think you should call it. And then she got feedback from Aunt Norma. Now, Aunt Norma was a spunky elderly lady who had been married for many years but now was a widow. And she says, "Well, I'll tell you what you should call it. You should call it what I would tell my dead husband if I could dig him up from the grave." And she said, actually, Aunt Norma had really had a good marriage, and it had lasted many, many years. But even then, she said, there were some things we could have learned, and we could have done better. So, you know, learning some new things sometimes is key to being able to do this relationship thing that no one ever really teaches us about.
So how are we going to deal with these difficult issues? There are certain things that are required. The first thing is that we must have an honest examination of the problem. We've honestly got to look at it in a way where we can hear each other. There's also got to be a controlled emotion.
Controlled emotion. And, you know, the fact that the issue is difficult, it probably is difficult because you either have different opinions or you do have strong emotions about it. So in order to discuss it, you have to be able to control those emotions.
And you have to eliminate high conflict, because if conflict is present, you're not going to be able to talk rationally about it. You're not going to be able to solve the problem. And I think that also an important component.
The last component really is prayer. And before we even talk about problem solving, we want to just stop and have a moment of prayer and ask the Lord to guide us in this venture. Would you pray with us? Lord, you know that in every seminar, when we talk to people, one of the most difficult things is to be able to communicate about the issues that we have, to communicate with each other openly and honestly. And Lord, as we talk about this afternoon, we pray that you will open our hearts and minds so that we will think your thoughts and that we will understand each other, that we will be open to knowing and loving our spouse in a new way. We thank you, and we pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. All right, we've got a plan for you, and we will help you work through this plan. I think that if you will use the plan, you're going to find out it's going to be helpful for you. I've used the plan in counseling situations, and I remember one couple that came to me with a problem, an argument they'd been having every Sunday for 13 years. Don't you know that was a fun place to be? Don't you know that they were looking forward to Sunday morning every Saturday night? Every Sunday they would have the same argument. They had it for 13 years, and they came into my office and they said, "We don't really know why we're here. We're having the same argument every week. We've been to other people. No one can help us with this. We don't know. We're wasting your time, but we thought we'd come anyway." I said, "Well, humor me. I think I can help you with this." And I explained the plan to them. And the plan involves speaker and listener talking back and forth and with a very controlled way of speaking, a specific way. And so it was her problem, and I had her speak first. She said two or three points she made, and it took us about 5 minutes to get those out because she wanted to beat him up as she was talking, you know, with her words. But we had to coach her in how to do this. So she finally got through it, and finally it was his turn. And the very first thing out of his mouth, she said, "I never knew that. I've been arguing for 13 years every week, and she'd never heard this." She said, "Do you really mean that?" He said, "Well, yeah, I do." "Well, that changes everything." And there, in a course of 5 minutes, we were able to solve the problem by simply using a plan, controlling the emotions, reducing the conflict, speaking to each other, and listening to one another, the plan can work. It can work for you.
Now, one thing we want to tell you beforehand is that this is basically, we're talking about the things that are difficult for the two of you, the things that you just never seem to quite get over. And I think every relationship has those things. Some things are simple for us, and we can work them out. But other things are difficult. Maybe we don't know how to approach it or how to talk about it. And when you look at this, it may seem like, well, this is just not natural. You know, this isn't a normal way to talk. Well, it's still worth taking a look, because if you've got 13 years of something that you haven't been able to solve, maybe we need a different technique to do it. So be open-minded about this. First of all, the first thing you do in the plan is to make an appointment to talk about whatever the issue is.
Now, remember that one of the reasons for making an appointment is that sometimes people feel trapped. Remember the avoidance and withdrawal pattern of negative communication? The avoider and withdrawer often feels trapped. And so to make an appointment, you do it something like this. Gail, I'd like to talk to you about, and then you name the problem. When's a good time for you?
Well, let's see. I get home tomorrow probably about 6. I've got a few things, you know, I need to get supper on and stuff. What about 7:30?
7:30. All right, so you make the appointment. And once you've made the appointment, that time you have to keep it free from everything else. You're going to make this appointment, and you've got to keep that appointment. You don't talk about this problem until the appointment time comes up, because it's going to be talked about then and not before. If you bring it up now, then you're ruining the whole purpose of the appointment.
The appointment should be within the next 24 to 48 hours. Whenever your spouse requests it, say, you know, all right, we're going to do this soon. We're not going to wait. We're not going to wait a long time. It should be soon. And the fact that you're not going to talk about it before kind of frees up everything between now and then. It frees it up for two things. Number one, you don't feel stressed about it in the meantime, because you know, okay, we will be dealing with it. It's kind of compartmentalized at that point, and you don't have to be angry with each other in the meantime. The other thing it does is it gives you a little bit of time to think about whatever the issue is yourself, to listen to yourself. What do I really feel about this? Why do I have a problem with it? What am I really feeling? So it gives you time to think and to pray beforehand.
Next,
so make
thing,
the appointment.
Make the appointment, and next is keep the appointment. It does no good to make the appointment if you don't keep it. But when you keep the appointment, you keep it free from interruptions. Take the phone off the hook. Don't turn the cell phones on stun or vibrate. Turn them off. It does have an off button, and the world will wait. Turn it off. Tell the children you do not interrupt us unless one of you stops breathing or the house is on fire. You keep this time free from interruptions, and you set apart 1 hour, no more than an hour, because any more than that and your emotions can run too frazzled. So 1 hour, you make the appointment.
Number three, discuss the problem. You have to come with an openness, with a compassion for your spouse, and with the idea that I'm here to listen and to learn. Now, what we want you to do at this point, even though on your notes the steps are all listed, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, we're on number 3, and we want you to turn to page 3, because we kept the steps all in row in a line so that you'll have them there, but we put the plan for discussing the problem on the next page. Does that make sense? The speaker-listener technique.
And then we'll come back to the other steps of the plan. But let's talk about how to do step number 3, and that is discuss the problem. And that is found on page 3. It's called the speaker-listener technique.
Now, basically, speaker-listener has more to do, really, with listening than speaking. One of the things that we fail to do is listen to each other. And my job as Mike Tucker's wife is to be the world's foremost authority on Mike Tucker. I need to know more about him and understand more about him and his thought process and his feelings and everything else than anyone else in the world. That's my job. And so this can help me with that.
Yeah.
If I'm willing to listen and be open and really hear what he's saying rather than just thinking about what I want to say.
But if your motive is to fix me or to change me, then you're not going to listen to me. You're going to use the time while I'm talking to think up your response so that you can out-argue me.
That's right. If my motive is to win the argument, then I've lost already. My motive in this needs to be to find out exactly what he's thinking, what he's feeling. It's creating understanding between the two of us. My second thing needs to be able to articulate what I really feel to him so that he can understand.
But the same thing is true of me. I need to be the world's leading authority on Gail Tucker, and that means that I have to listen to her, and then I also have to learn a way to creatively communicate to her the things that I'm feeling so that she can receive them and she can understand them.
The Bible talks about this. It says in James 1:9, "Let everyone be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger." Quick to hear, slow to speak. Mike used to tell people in wedding ceremonies that God gave you two ears and one mouth, and he means something specific by that. You should listen twice as much as you talk. So that's God tells us we need to be slow to anger, quick to listen.
Now, in your folder, you also have a little card like this. It looks like a piece of kitchen tile, something like that. It's called the floor. I want you to take that out. There's only one in there because only one person at a time can have the floor.
You might have to search down there on the left side a little bit. You should be able to find it.
Left side. Everyone should have one of these in your folder, and it is titled The Floor. And basically, here's what the deal is. Let's say that Gail comes to me and says, "Mike, I need to talk about something. This is the problem is X. When's a good time?" And I set a time. When we get together and we keep the appointment, since this is Gail's issue, she will have the floor first. Now, the person with the floor becomes the speaker. The other person becomes the listener. And it doesn't stay that way forever because once the speaker has made some points, then we exchange. Now, if you ever lose the floor, in other words, you lose the card, you can have any object to hold to indicate who has the floor. I would recommend something soft, usually. Pillows are good. Ball bats are bad. So hold something soft. But in the meantime, you've got this now. You've got this as the tool. And so here are the rules that we have for the speaker and the listener for the floor. First of all, what we're saying here is that it eliminates all the emotions and all the negative communication things.
Well, and I think that's important to note.
Yeah.
You know, the negative patterns that we talked about last night, if you follow this method of discussing the problem, it eliminates the possibility for all four of them.
Yeah. Here are the rules for the speaker. Now, since Gail, it's her issue, she has the floor first, she is the speaker, here are her rules. First of all, speak for yourself, don't mind read. That means she's going to be using I statements, but not, you know, "I know you feel this way," because that's mind reading. She's reading my emotions. She has to speak for herself using I statements. "This is what I feel." And she cannot project my feelings. Instead, she has to relate her feelings. She speaks only for herself. She cannot say, "Well, we've always done this," or "We always do that," or "We've always thought this," or "You've always done this." She speaks for herself using the I statements. She must keep her statements brief, not going on and on. Now, you know, we're talking about sentences and not run-on sentences, the kind, you know, that you see sometimes in schoolwork where it goes on for three pages. Wrong. This is a short sentence because you're supposed to say this in such a way that your partner could actually repeat it back. And if you unload the whole load on them with this one sentence, you've lost the battle already. You're going to have several opportunities to have several sentences, a number of sentences to get everything out. So break it down to small bite-sized pieces so that your partner can actually hear and repeat back to you what it is you're saying. So don't go on and on. Stop to let the listener paraphrase, and that is the next step. Once you've said the sentence, then you stop and you allow the listener to paraphrase. A good pattern to use in saying the things you want to say is something like this. "Gail, when you do X in Y situation, I feel Z. When you do this under these circumstances, this is how it makes me feel." That makes sense? When you do this under these circumstances, when this happens under these circumstances, this is how it makes me feel. That's a good pattern to follow for making these statements. And really, it can be done just that quickly, that short. If it goes on much longer than that, it gets difficult for the listener to speak back. And by the way, you limit this to the one issue that you advertised. We're going to talk about X. That means you don't talk about Y and Z as well. Those are another discussion. That's another appointment. Only one topic at a time. One topic at a time, and then you do it in brief sentences. Now, those are the rules for the speaker, okay?
Now, you know, last night when you saw the videos, some of those things came from our house. You know, the dishes in the sink?
That was ours.
Came from our house.
We wrote those scripts.
Ridiculous, right?
Out of our life.
Who cares about dishes and where you put them, and why would you argue about that? But that came from our house, so
yeah.
That was one of our issues.
Yeah.
But the thing is, almost always, there's something more than the dishes in the sink or the socks on the floor. There's an underlying issue that's not being talked about,
yeah.
And that's why you get into a fight about it.
Yeah.
So
well, let's take a look, first of all, at the rules for the listener. And the listener is to listen to what's being said and just simply paraphrase what they hear. I think I just skipped past
there.
Paraphrase what you hear. Focus on the speaker's message and don't rebut. And, you know, there's more than one way to rebut. A rebuttal is, well, that's stupid, or, but what about this? That's a rebuttal. You can't do that. Another way to rebut is, yeah, right. Or the sigh, the rolling of the eyes, the groan. All of those constitute rebuttal, and that's not what we're here for. By listening and hearing what your partner is saying, you're not saying, I agree. You're simply saying, I hear. We assume you don't agree or you wouldn't be having an issue. So that much we assume. But the job is not to rebut, but to hear and to be able to paraphrase back exactly what your partner says, either word for word or paraphrase in your own words. Now, the things that you can do is you can ask for clarification. Could you say that again another way? I don't think I understood that. Or you could ask, can you give me an example of that? And once you have the example and you think you understand, then you paraphrase back or you repeat back word for word exactly what was said to you, thus telling your partner, I've heard you, I understand what you're saying. Then there are rules for both in this little card, and the rules for both is this. The speaker has the floor. The speaker keeps the floor while the listener paraphrases, but we're also going to share the floor. Once the speaker has made two or three points, we share the floor, and then the roles are reversed. And as Gail said, one of the issues that we put on those videos was, well, all of them were kind of like ours, weren't they?
Not all of them.
Not all, but a lot of them
similar.
Were.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We wrote all of them, so. But one of those was the dishes, and that was Gail's issue. And so if we're going to demonstrate this, then really.
And that means that I get the floor.
You get the floor, don't you? But I'm holding it. I kind of like it right
but
here.
I want it.
But you're going to take it, aren't
yeah.
you?
Okay. I get it. So we come together, and I have the floor, and I may say, you know, I really feel like we need to talk about this dishes in the sink thing because there's more to it than just the dishes in the sink.
Okay.
When I come in after we've already had a discussion about this and you've agreed on how we're going to handle this, and then I still find the dishes piled in the sink, I feel like either you lied to me or you just didn't care.
All right, so what I hear you saying is that once we have an agreement, we've talked about it, and then you come in and you find out that the agreement was not followed, then you feel like I've either lied or I just simply don't care about what's happening.
Yeah, it seems like a huge lack of respect.
All right, what I'm hearing you say more is more than about the dishes. You don't think that I respect you then.
That's right, and it makes me feel like, well, maybe you think I'm the maid and I'll take care of it anyway, you know, and so it doesn't matter.
All right, so you feel that I'm treating you as though you're a household employee and I should expect you to do those things and you're just someone I pay and you go away.
Exactly, and it bothers me after we've had an agreement.
Okay, all right. I think that you've made your 3 points.
Really?
Yeah.
I could say I might have more.
I know you do have more, and we'll come back to you after I make my 3 points.
I could
points.
Think of more.
I know you could. I know. You are a very creative woman.
Okay.
Thank you so much. All right. What I want to say is, first of all, I have heard what you said, and I understand that. But the main thing I want to say is that when I have made an effort to keep the house clean, and what I get is criticism, even though I didn't do it right, but I did make an effort, what I get is criticism, I feel like I'm not respected.
Okay, so you feel like you tried to do something to make an effort to help, and you didn't get any respect for
it. The kids had left the dishes on the floor. I did pick them up. I forgot, and I put them in the sink. And for that, I apologize. But when I do something to help around the house, and I don't get that respect, then I feel like I should have left them on the floor.
So you feel like you might as well not try if when you do try, you don't get any credit for it.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. See, you can think of more things to say, right? Ladies?
Yeah, and we could go on. Let's not go on anymore with this. But you get the idea, don't you? I mean, basically, we're going to go back and forth like this, and I realize now that the issue is more than the dishes, and it's more than the sink. It is this issue of respect. When she goes to use the sink and it's filled with dirty dishes, then, of course, she feels like I haven't respected her and I haven't followed through on what it is that I agreed to do. And so she feels angry and upset over that or hurt. I, on the other hand, thought that, you know, that the little path through the floor with the dishes on the floor was not healthy either, and I at least had solved that problem. But still, I knew I didn't go all the way. And so anyway, we at least have the understanding. But now there's another step after this.
All right, so what happens is, and obviously we're using a small issue, and this can be...
Sure didn't seem small at the time.
Yeah, oh, well, that's the case, isn't it? A lot of times the little stuff turns out to be kind of big stuff when it shouldn't.
We need prayer now.
So you need to go back and forth until everybody has said everything they want to say about it. And let me say this as well. It may not be an argument between you. You can also use this if you have a big decision to make and you maybe have different opinions on the decision. Go back and forth until both of you feel comfortable that you understand everything that your spouse feels about it, and you feel like you have been able to communicate everything that you feel about it. Now you've created full understanding. Yeah. So then you move to the next step.
That's back on page 2 of your notes.
Yeah, go back to step 4. We just wanted to keep that floor part all together so you'd have it grouped and the steps grouped. That's why they're on different pages.
And step 4 is we find a solution, and that means we enter into brainstorming. Once I've heard everything Gail has to say, and Gail has heard everything that I have to say, and we have communicated that we understand each other because we have, after all, paraphrased back to each other what the other person said. It doesn't mean that we agree on everything yet, but we at least have understanding from each other, right? Once we've done that, now that the understanding is there, now let's fix the thing. All right, we understand the thing, so now let's fix it. And that means we just start to brainstorm. And you get a pencil and a piece of paper, and you write down every idea that comes up. It doesn't matter how stupid or outlandish it is. Write the idea down.
And this is the point where you can kind of lighten things up a little bit because, you know, some ideas are great and some are ridiculous and, you know.
We could buy paper plates, I think, you know.
Okay, write it
down. We wouldn't have to worry about the stupid sink.
We could hire a maid.
Yeah, well. We could do that.
Let's
we're talking
that
bankruptcy.
No,
but,
no,
you know,
it's my idea. We're putting it down.
But we could do it.
Yeah. We could have the kids do the dishes.
I like that one. Of course, now that they're 27 and 29, yeah, that's not going to work anymore.
It's hard to do. They still don't do the dishes when they come.
But in other words, you write down every idea. And once you exhaust the ideas, you're writing them down, then you start to narrow that down a little bit. All right, the paper plates and the maid idea, it's attractive, but unrealistic because we can't afford that, okay?
You know, there's an interesting thing that happens at this point because we've had this problem, and every time I look at the problem, I see you.
No, it's you.
No, you.
You're the problem.
Are the problem.
I think it's you.
But what happens here is that, all right, we've got this understanding of what's going on, and this problem now becomes a thing out here that we are going to solve. We are a team solving a problem. It's not the person that's the problem. It's this thing. We're going to work on it together. We're a team, and we're going to solve the problem. To me, when I heard that, that was just the greatest visual to me. And our friends Mike and Brenda Ofterhaar shared that with us. I thought, that's a wonderful concept. I saw a question right there.
I think one sweet way is, you know, that is probably a real issue that we need to set another appointment for. And I'd like to deal with that one as well. Let's set another appointment for that and come back and work on the other, don't you think? But let's just, you know, I think that a gentle reminder like that is that you're right, that's an issue we need to discuss. Can we make another appointment for that?
Yeah, but that you're right, because that happens so easily.
Oh,
pretty soon
easily.
You're off down the path somewhere. The other thing you can do, if you find that you have a hard time following this plan and doing the speaker-listener technique, you can get a third party that you trust to kind of help you with it, referee back and forth. Okay, you're on track, you know, and they don't...
Yeah.
It's not their judgment as to who's right or wrong, but they can help you in the discussion process.
Yeah.
And that happens
a lot of
times.
That can be a friend or a counselor. A counselor is a rent-a-friend, basically. In fact, they did a study of people who were depressed, who one group talked to a counselor every week, and the other group talked to a friend. Recovery rates were identical. So a counselor is a good rent-a-friend. But, you know, hey, I've taken a lot of money as a rent-a-friend, so it's a good thing.
Okay, so now the problem is out here,
yeah.
And it's a mental shift, an attitude shift. Oh, okay, well, you're not the problem. We're a team that's going to solve this problem, and we'll do it together.
We write down all the ideas, and then we begin to weed out some of the ideas. We find maybe a part of this idea and this one we bring together, we put it together. And once we've settled upon a plan to solve this, we write it down. I'll do this, you'll do this, this is our agreement together, we do this. You write it down, you sign it, and you date it. Because this is our new contract. We have a contract between us. And then if this is something that happens on a regular basis, you set another appointment to come back maybe in a few days. And then the only thing you ask is, number one, did we do it? And number two, how did it work? If we didn't do it, then we've got to talk about that. Why didn't we do it? What do we need to fix? And if we did it and it didn't work, then let's tweak it. Let's go back to the brainstorming if we need to. Let's tweak it until it works, because now we're a team.
So on the screen, we've got find the solution, implement the solution. Like he was saying,
right.
You've set a time, and during that time, this is what you're going to do. This is your new plan, and you do this until otherwise notified.
Yeah.
And then you come back and evaluate it.
And by the way, once you find something that works, this is your new behavior for the rest of your life. Until otherwise notified. All right? And if indeed circumstances change, then the plan can change. But until they do, this is the new behavior for the rest of your life. This is what we do, because this is what's going to make our spouse happy.
Evaluating, like he said, did we do it? Did it work? Those are your two questions. If not, how can we fix it?
Right. And of course, this avoids blindsiding. You don't blindside your partner because you've set an appointment. It keeps the conflict.
It keeps the conflict contained. In other words, we know that there's a certain time that this is going to be dealt with, so we don't have to deal with it all the time. It keeps most of our time free of conflict so that we enjoy each other more.
And by the way, if you don't solve it in the 1 hour you set aside, then you stop, you make another appointment, and you come back and pick up where you left off until you get it done. That makes sense? You don't go any longer than an hour, because you'll wear yourself out. And then it also assures that difficult details issues will be dealt with eventually.
And it reduces explosions and harsh words, damaging words, because it's controlled. Those emotions are controlled.
Yeah.
Now, like we said, this is stilted language. We don't usually say to each other, well, when you do this in this situation, I feel... That's not how we normally talk, is it? But it can be a great tool on those issues that are hard for you. We had one couple a couple of weeks ago that said, you know, my husband will never talk about anything.
Yeah.
But for some reason, he started talking when we did this. Now, I don't know if it's because she hadn't listened before or what it was. Maybe it closed her mouth long enough that he could talk. Who knows what it was? But she was thrilled. She was excited because, oh, he talked and he never talks. So we want to take a few minutes here. Did you want to talk about that?
Yeah. What we'd like you to do right now is choose a topic in your relationship that both of you are willing to discuss. Now, I would encourage you that since this is your first adventure with the speaker-listener technique, that you choose something that is less volatile. You know, if called upon, we can serve as referee. We'll get between you and back. But so something that is less volatile right now, but something that is an issue. And begin to use the speaker-listener technique in order to try to work through it. Use the skills that you've learned here with the floor.
Yeah, just a little practice exercise. Take something small, even just an example of something, and talk about it.
All right.
All right, we're going to give you some time
right now. We'll take a few minutes
right now.